This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews. We will catch up later in the show with Jill Serkin, who is currently posting on Twitter about loons for some reason. I have no idea why she's gone back to the 1970s, but, you know, that's Jill's. Anyway, do you know, it's probably better if we talk to somebody sensible. So I was lucky enough to catch up with Mr. Mark Lumsden-Taylor. Mark is the chief executive of the Rural Policy Group. Let's hear what Mark had to say.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show Mr. Mark Lumsden-Taylor of the Rural Policy Group. Mark, good afternoon. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful. Good to see you. And I'm really looking forward to doing this because I want to find out about the Rural Policy Group. Kent is a strange county because it's quite a large county and there are some lovely cities and towns and villages, but we are still quite a rural community as well.
We are. And so I've been passionate about rural pretty much since my time in the county, coming up, 16, 17 years now.
Right.
I cannot believe it. And what I knew 16 years ago about rural, you could probably write on a postage stamp. Mm-hmm. What I know now is a reasonable amount. Right. And the value of rural in so many different perspectives is often unseen. And 85% of Kent is designated rural in its right. in class, in terms of landmass. 85%. People forget right. that. Yeah. Often we know we have two huge motorways running through it. Mm. And they always say you can travel through Kent horizontally, but vertically is impossible.
Yeah.
When you look at it, that's pretty true. So with my kind of past life and my current life, we were always very passionate about driving the agenda for rural. So we did it on economic value. Mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years ago, and then we thought, well, actually we need to bring more things in terms of socioeconomic, in terms of health, mm-hmm. also in terms of the environment. And we created Rural Policy Group actually in mid-19. Mm-hmm. And it really came into its own at the beginning of 20 when COVID-19 landed, and suddenly everybody was faced with staying at home, and digital kicked off big time. So we said, well, okay, the Rural Policy Group needs to kind of move to the next level, really. And this isn't the day job either, Paul. This is all entirely something that I feel very strongly about. And it's overseen by a council of leaders, both from political, public and private. And they oversee the direction of travel. And effectively, it's an independent thought leadership think tank.
Yep.
That covers big idea, but a big issues. So its main focus is rural, preventative health, environmental, social governance. They're the three big things, and they're all interlinked, and they're underpinned by food pricing and everything else. So the group basically is a focal point for debate. It produces two thought leadership documents every year, which then go into government, into different ministries, and hopefully provides an additional insight into the issues of the day. So the one we've just done literally last week was on rural health and social care.
Right.
And the linkage between the two things. And I'll talk a little bit about what came out of that. It's really, really interesting. It also is designed to raise the profile of rural. Mm. So it can leverage the highest amount of money and investment it possibly can into respective businesses and the sector as a whole. Mm. And then we'll publish that on an annual basis as well through an annual general meeting. For all people who wish to be involved. So the Red Talks, Rural Economic Development Talks, which came out of COVID actually, literally within the first week, we thought, well, we need to do something to support rural here and money, because obviously lots of other sectors are being talked about, but rural didn't necessarily have the same voice that it should have. So we started it, and every event always has a either a minister, a all parliamentary group chairman, or House of Lords, Commons, whatever, whichever, and then has a business leader
right.
from a large corporate, sometimes a PLC, sometimes local regional, and then it has a kind of what I would call a third party. So sometimes that could be a lawyer, it could be chartered accountancy, and then they all have a third of the time to make their point, and then two-thirds of the time is audience.
Right. Right. Okay.
So one third them, two thirds engagement. So it actually becomes very spirited, particularly if you have two politicians, Labour and a Conservative. That always marks it up. But it's gained some prominence because people are talking about it in Westminster because it's a little bit different. Mm. And then the outcomes are published within 10 days.
Right.
And then we collate them every 6 months and the next report, which is thought leadership, is going to be out probably within the next month, I would say.
Okay, cool. Okay, well, let's explore some of those three strands that you're looking at, Mark. And for those of us that aren't in the rural economy, particularly, although we live in rural areas, I certainly do. I live in Tenterden, but I have no one around me. I have no one around me apart from sheep, which is good. And of course, sheep were a big part of the Kent economy for a long, long time.
Kent wool growers.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I don't know if you know, the Romney Marsh Wool Company, they just won a national award last week. So congratulations to Christina and the team there. But let's look at the three strands that the Rural Policy Group have highlighted about the issues around the rural economy and social care. I don't mind which one you start with, but let's go with one of them and just explore what you think the critical issues of that are as we stand at the moment.
So if we kind of look at the last 6 months, and you look at, we'll start with rural. So as I said, you know, also rural is 85% designated in Kent in terms of its scale, in terms of what the county represents. Remember, Rural Policy Group as well is a national program.
Right. Okay.
So we look at a whole different. So we look at it from a national perspective as well, and okay. We've had people from all over the United Kingdom actually on it. So we look at the interdependency of rural, right, food, preventative health, and I don't know, CSR. Now, that basically means corporate and social governance, right?
Yeah, sure.
But with CSR, that is a very much an old term, and very much people talk about environmental social governance. So how are we doing protecting the planet? So if we start with rural, and we look at food, some of the key insights have come out of this, that the food system does need a radical rethink. People need to look at health, nutrition, well-being, and a lot of it is talked about, but a lot of it is not joined up. Technology is a massive part of where rural is going, and the government has supported with some new grant schemes and some technical schemes that are coming out in September as well, I think, to support innovation in the food sector and the food industry. But again, joining that up, and you mentioned skills earlier and people getting jobs and training, what is the way in which, and that's also my former life, what is the way in which people can then be trained so the skills meet the job requirements, which meets the needs of business and industry. Good food, good health, good work, good performance isn't collectively joined up.
Right.
So when you look at health and healthcare, and then you look at diet, nutrition, people talk about it a lot, but then joining it up in the world of rural doesn't necessarily work. And the other big thing about rural, which is quite important, is food price and the challenge around making sure that the supply chain at the bottom of the stream gets the right proportion and also is paid on time within terms versus the people in the midstream and the upstream.
Yep.
So it's the valuation of that and how those people can be fairly paid.
Yeah.
And then there's a big debate. No politician will ever go on record and go, food needs to be more expensive.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Nobody is going to say that. Yeah. What we do, and this came out of one of the events in food pricing, so this links into my point about rural and food. Food pricing is consumers do need protecting from substandard food. We had the whole piece about America and chicken and so forth not so long ago. But also as well, people need to be prepared to pay the right price for the right quality of food, and how do we manage that in an effective way? The government put in the best practice 90-day payment terms piece a number of years ago now, I think, to encourage retailers to actually follow that. But some people down the bottom of the food chain are being paid on 120 days. You can't manage 4 months worth of cash flow not receded in your bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the debate and the discussion about that needs to move on. And again, that's been picked up heavily by RPG in terms of the debate. When you turn into healthcare, and people forget, actually, we did a big piece around preventative health and actually looking at stopping the issues that come down the line that affect your health before they become issues. It's called salutogenesis. And we've had a big conversation about how you can actually be more effective with prevention in the workplace, more proactive rather than reactive, to reduce illness and sickness ultimately, and look at it in a different way. And again, that has a direct impact on rural in terms of food, diet, nutrition and everything else. So all of this weaves in. And then finally, the piece around environmental social governance brings it all together. There is an innate desire for business to do good and for business to make a difference. Historically, corporate and social responsibility was something you'd do a report, file it on the shelf, job done, right, you know, board meeting ticked. Environmental social governance is much more than that. It's actually embedded within your business and changing the way you do things as an organization. And then it can be auditable, it can be checked, but also consumers can understand what you do. There's a huge, I mean, it's what's being talked about all the time at the moment. It is a massive subject of debate. So we've run a number of debates around that and had a number of people from the House of Lords involved. So in terms of what you were saying about what should we do, what are the actions to move things forward? The approach to CSR, people don't really understand it fully. And what RPG want to do is run a further set of round tables with some big banking leaders that are going to get involved to share how it needs to be for those mid-tier companies so they can understand and adapt and actually use it to their competitive advantage. Rural, and it's something I feel very strongly about. We always talk about age profile and demographics and everything else and having the right people in the right jobs. We need to make sure that we're joining up skills with jobs in rural to enable that they're then future-proofing for the sector moving forward. Yep. We have not got that right in 20 years. Yep. It's just not, never got it right. So RPG is looking at some innovative piece around that. Talking up and profiling rural in terms of its value to the economy, again, digitally as well as physically, is another recommendation that's coming through the work that's been done. And I suppose most importantly is making people understand and be aware of exactly the importance of the food and supply chain across all aspects of rural production, because it's not just you weave rural tourism into that.
Sure.
As well. I mean, we haven't touched on it, but you weave that in there.
Yeah.
In terms of people understanding and paying the right value for what it is.
Yeah.
There are two things in life. Who's buying it and how much is it costing me?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And as you say, a lot of these things have been shied away from by politicians because they're a little bit too difficult to come out with as sound bites. You know, I know farmers here in Kent that have massive contracts with supermarkets, but they're nailed to the ground in terms of their costs. And that's because the supermarket want to get it out as cheap as they can, but they demand high quality, and then the farmer has to produce bulk stuff at very, very tight margins, and that's not sustainable in the long term. It's just not.
It's also as well where there are instances where companies do good, and they're fair with their people at the bottom of the stream, if you like.
Yeah.
We need to talk about that positively. We need to talk up the good stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the recommendations in the report is producing a document that outlines lucidly and briefly why British farming matters and the fresh produce industry. Because I think there's a key part of, well, hang on a minute, let's look at what the value is.
Yeah.
And people say, well, rural is not a huge part of the economy. Well, actually, rural and all of the associated industries that support it is massive. It's huge.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I spent years championing the value of rural, and we're bringing that back. And again, with my corporate hat on at McIntyre Hudson and Baker Tilly, we should be promoting and supporting the sectors to which we serve.
Mm.
It's a duty of care. Mm. And I feel really strongly about, 78,000 kids got a better chance in life because of the work that the staff did at the group. At the same time, we need to support farmers and producers, because a lot of them will look at this sort of policy stuff and go, well, you know, it is what it is. And they don't have the time. And that's where institutions or organizations, if you like policy group, come in to try and support and promote the agenda.
Absolutely. And that's crucial, isn't it? We need to talk about these things. We need to have discussions about them. We need to have ideas. We need to innovate, especially with everything that's going on around us at the moment. You know, here we've got, I don't know, a triple whammy, really. We've got Brexit. We've got a pandemic. And then, of course, we've got climate issues, and all of those things have to be factored into what we're doing. And of course, a lot of it is going to have, you know, things like the lockdown and pandemic are going to have a knock-on effect for years to come as the economy tries to recover itself. So probably now is as good a time as any to start looking at innovative ways of handling different parts of the economy.
And looking at ways in which you can, you know, save. I mean, one of the recommendations in the report is about preventative, can I ever say that word properly, healthcare that looks at the issues before they become issues. And if there is a an APPG, an all parliamentary party work group established or bolted onto something else, so, well, actually, we're spending millions and millions and millions in terms of dealing with the issues when they become issues. Well, let's look at how we can do it, perhaps. By stopping the issues in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely.
That trying to start food. There are always winners and losers in any situation. Somebody was referring to the war, saying, you know, how people profiteered over 6 years. And then there are people that just lost absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And the pandemic is no different in that way. You know, event companies have been absolutely mutilated. You know, some of them will never, ever, ever recover. You see pubs which have gone out of business. And some of it will come back, obviously. But and then there are those, you know, whoever has the best, you know, hand sanitizers have probably done very, very well in this.
Sure, exactly. Yeah.
You know, and there will be winners and losers in the rural sector for sure. And a lot of it will come back. There is a lot of pent up funds ready to go back into the economy. The Bank of England's report on bank deposits shows that. I can't remember how many billion is ahead of where it was a year ago, because people have not been able to spend. There will be an unlocking. And it's making sure that the rural sector is part of that solution and part of that equation. So policy group is there. It is there to do that, in effect, and is there to champion the key issues. And the second, its second original thought, or if you like, thought leadership document comes out in a couple of weeks. And we'll be making sure it gets out to the relevant people.
Fantastic. Mark, this is a big, big subject, and it's something that I want to continue talking to you about over the coming months, because I think there's lots and lots. Sadly, at the moment, we're running out of time.
No problem.
It's something I want to explore, and I want to keep center stage, because what you've outlined is incredibly important. And therefore, over the coming months, I want to come back to you, if I may, and explore some of these issues in more depth when we have a little more time.
And whilst RPG is a kind of national policy group, Kent is the Garden of England. It is where I live. It is where I'm passionate about. And we do produce a heck of a lot of food in this county. So Kent is very much, as I suppose Norfolk and Lincolnshire, are cornerstones of the rural economy. And we need to talk like that. We also need to talk it up a lot more than we do.
Absolutely. And of course, also Kent in the last couple of decades has become a great centre of wine growing as well.
It has indeed. Yeah. We did a joint project in my former life with George Jessel, who I think has just been covered in Kent Life this month for the that was a great project, actually, to try and improve the skill base and train people in Kent, as well as obviously you've got the Sussex work. And George has cracked on with that project as well, so proud to have been part of that to begin with.
Fantastic. Mark, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. If people want to find out about the work of the Rural Policy Group, what's your website?
Oh gosh, it's
I've got it here. Yeah, it's ruralpolicy.group.
Yeah. It's also LinkedIn, and all the recordings are now live streamed by LinkedIn.
Fantastic.
As well. So you can actually access the streams online, as well as registering on Zoom for the next suite of talks. All the talks are up there for the next 6 months, which are being populated at the moment. And we are very fortunate that we have very strong political support in Westminster, which is great.
Yeah, fantastic. Mark, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you too, Paul.
And we wish you continued success with the Rural Policy Group. And
thank you very much indeed.
We're going to talk to you more during the rest of the year. Thanks for now, and bye-bye for now.
Thanks, Paul.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
Loch Associates Group can help you with your employment law, HR, health and well-being and mediation needs. People are our business. It's what we do every day. Find us online at lochassociates.co.uk.
You're listening to Channel Radio.
That was Mark Lumsden-Taylor there of the Rural Policy Group. As I said at the end of that interview, it's something I want to explore more over the rest of the year because it is a fantastic subject for the UK, but incredibly important for here in Kent, because as Tracy Ferguson has said on Twitter, wow, 85% designated rural in Kent. I wonder how that compares to other counties. Good question. And she says, can see the need for the Rural Policy Group, as it's a very interesting to learn about its role supporting the community, giving UK Rural a voice. And she also goes on to say, raising awareness of good food at the right price is so important. It's paramount to keeping us healthy, both in our body and mind. I've listened to some podcasts over the last week about what's in processed food and the buying decisions behind them, and cost is a big factor. Absolutely. It's one of those things, isn't it? We all understand that cost is important, especially for people that struggle to have income. But at the end of the day, you get what you pay for. And if we're going to continue to try to pay the smallest amount we possibly can, you're going to continue to get pretty poor quality food. So it's a balance, and it's how we address those issues that's the major talking point. And one of the things that I want to explore with Mark as time goes past is how we make food accessible to everybody, but make it of a quality that is nutritional and healthy. But then I caught up with Jules earlier, and we had a rant about some other stuff. And I'll tell you what, why don't we just listen to what she has to say?
It's that time of the week again when I catch up with the ranting queen, Jules Serkin. Good afternoon, my dear.
Well, I'm in a lovely mood, Paul Andrews, because, of course, I was celebrating my 27th anniversary with my new husband.
With your new husband. 27 individual new years.
Well, because we haven't actually been married for 27 years. We've only been married for 10.
Right.
Various reasons, but yeah, it was nice because we
did you go anywhere?
We were in our house in lockdown, but we did get some really nice food, so I decided not to cook. And you know my lovely friend Chef Craig Mather of Little Ships and the Royal Hotel. Of where we frequent in the days of the slope off.
Three days a week at one time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What was the dessert that you were into?
Oh, you're thinking of the baked vanilla, or what was it? The yogurt, the baked yogurt.
Yeah, baked yogurt, yeah.
Ooh. But that's the shipping Konya. That's another story. Also, a free house, of which I love. I love a free house. But Craig Mather, Slopeoff, yeah, we always go there in Ramsgate. It's right on the seafront. It used to be Miles Bar.
Right. But what did you have? You started telling me what you had from Craig.
Well, so it was a takeaway. And please don't say takeout because it annoys me because it's American. So it was a takeaway. And
take it out then.
It's very, very organised, because I phoned up to order it and spoke to their lovely maitre d', and I had a prawn cocktail, very traditional. He does a great prawn cocktail.
Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. You had a prawn cocktail, steak and chips with mushrooms, Black Forest gatto, and a bottle of Black Tower. Is that right?
No, Blue Nun. No.
We're in 1970s, that.
It is, but those prawn cocktails, they're a classic, Paul Andrews, and they've got real shell-on prawns in it, a little bit of avocado, nice twist, and he doesn't stint on the prawns. It's not measly. Right. So you get a prawn cocktail, which I had. Then the new husband had the mezze, and I ordered for him. I didn't ask him what he wanted, because I sort of know him after 27 years.
he gets what he's given.
Being a nice Jewish boy, I wasn't going to force him to have prawns. Although he does love prawns, he does love a bacon sandwich. But that's another story. So I got him the mezze, and they do this beautiful homemade smoked hummus and this lovely sort of baba ganoush. Craig Mather makes these beautiful homemade crackers. I tell you, you'd never eat a crisp again if you could have one of these crackers. They are just amazing.
Right.
Now, Craig Mather used to be the chief lecturer at Thanet College.
Yep.
For the hospitality crew, which is now Broadstairs College. So they rebranded.
Oh, isn't it East Kent College?
I think it's Broadstairs College, isn't it?
I don't know.
I can't keep up. On the Twitter, they're Broadstairs College.
But
I don't know why they've done that, really. So he had this beautiful mezze, and then he looked at my prawn cocktail and wished he'd had that, because I felt bad. So we did a little swap. A bit of this, bit of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was fine. So we shared both plates. And then we had a three fish pie for two, which was absolutely delicious. And followed by a chocolate torte with a twist. And I can't tell you what the twist is. I've forgotten, but there was a nice twist. what's it called? A posh meringue. What's a posh meringue called? Pavlova.
Right, okay.
With a really nice lemon, very sharp lemon, which I thought would be really nice after the fish pie.
Sounds good.
And it was delicious. And it was very well organised. It was beautifully wrapped and packaged and, you know, paper with all the... What I was impressed with him was, you know, hospitality are really struggling, but it was all branded. So there was a brown paper bag with little ships on it. Everything was packaged and branded beautifully. And the three fish pie had, as if you bought it from a proper supermarket or something, you know, yeah. Takeaway, with all the sell-by date on it and how to cook it on it and all the ingredients.
Wow.
Wrapped around. So beautifully done. And we just had to pop it in the oven 45 minutes. So really good. I'm going to do Mother's Day next from there. But we had a pre-time to pick it up. So we collected it at 4 p.m. I knew I'd be out of bed by then. And collected it, but while we did it, we parked and walked along the front. It was right. A lovely day, if you remember Saturday. It was really sunny.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But I was astonished to find that Thanet Council, none of the loos were open, and I was busting. None of the loos were open at all. Luckily, I had my shiwi with me. But also, the bins were absolutely overflowing. Now, yep. Where we are in Whitstable, we have a lot of visitors, as you know, and the bins have been overflowing, but they get emptied every morning. But here it wasn't busy and the bins were terrible. So I think Thanet Council is not as on the ball, and not to open the toilets really when people are in the parks and things. I thought was a bit much, frankly.
Yeah, well, it's fairly much par for the course in terms of where we are now, isn't it? Everybody's obsessed with
toilets.
With coronavirus and don't do anything else, you know. Everybody's running around jabbing everybody and doing things like that, but they haven't done any of the other things they're supposed to do.
To have a park full of people walking, playing, you know, yeah. Whatever they were doing, and to have a toilet there with due to corona closed, just a money saving exercise, because they've opened them everywhere else that I can see anyway. I think Thanet is particularly bad for opening loos, apparently.
I mean, a lot of places don't even have loos, so you know.
No, what do you do?
Yeah, exactly.
So that was nice. It was nice to hear, you know, I know that they're struggling, but they were also selling, you know, takeaways. They had ice creams, they had coffee. You could get cake and a coffee to take away. It was beautifully done.
Yeah.
Little hatch that they've made. So they've really, really adapted.
Made an effort, yeah. Yeah.
They were selling bread. You know, they've never done that before. Loaves of bread. So it was almost like a shop front. Yep. The way they'd done it. So very clever. Well done. Little Ships, Ramsgate. And Ramsgate's beautiful. It's a jewel, yeah, in the crown.
Yeah, cool.
Have you been there lately?
Well, not lately, no, because I haven't been anywhere for the last year.
yeah. So we stayed up. We had our own party and played music, and it was really nice. It was good.
Congratulations on your 27 years.
Yeah.
Or 10, 27, however many it is, with you and your new husband. Brilliant.
So, and what have you been up to?
Well, nothing, obviously.
Dusting,
yeah,
moving.
Haven't been anywhere. I've cleaned the house a couple of times a day. I've got nothing better to do.
Well, you know, my dishwasher's still kaput, and it's a year old.
Yeah.
Only a year old.
Isn't it under warranty then?
Yeah, but that's the whole point. Because my local guy, Steve Marley, would come and fix it the same day, you know, Whitstable High Street. But I can't use him. I have to use Bosch's... Yeah. engineer, and that's a week I'm waiting, and I'm sorry to all those people that don't have dishwashers, and you'll all hate me, but it takes so much time to wash up. It's just ridiculous. I feel like Nanette Newman.
Do you?
You'd have to be a certain age to get that joke.
Yeah, but if I could get Nanette Newman to do my washing up, I'd get rid of the dishwasher.
If I could get Paul Newman to do my washing up, I'd be in heaven.
Well, you would be, because that's where he is. But
I thought he was still alive.
Yeah, he is.
He makes a very nice salad dressing as well.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I haven't done very much, but you never guess what I'm doing on Wednesday, tomorrow.
Abseiling?
No, gin tasting.
Oh, where?
Well, online, obviously.
How are you doing it online? You don't even drink gin.
I know.
How do you even do that?
Well, I'm the reason I keep looking behind me is they're due to deliver the gin at any minute. And, of course, you have to be here to sign for it. And
Are you old enough? They might think you're too young.
Yeah, well, obviously, my 9-year-old Lucy's here, and I've said if someone rings the door, answer the door. But of course, they won't let her sign for it. I'm just waiting for them to deliver the gin. It's Warner's gin, and we're looking forward to an online gin tasting tomorrow.
Why haven't I been invited?
You will be invited to the next one. This is a cider. It's organised by my steward. My youngest. So we're seeing how it goes tomorrow, and we're doing that, and then he's going to organise a bigger one in a few weeks' time. So you will get an invite to that.
So are you having a non-alcoholic gin?
No. Amanda's going to do the tasting, and I'm going to do the what she says is.
Very good. I actually have, you know, Anno Distillers, our Kentish distillers. I have some of their glasses that they gave me when they were on Scoff and Quaff show a couple of years back. And my new husband broke one. See, this is why you need a dishwasher.
Yeah.
Because it's like, takes forever, all that washing and.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, how did you break your dishwasher? What have you done to it?
Nothing. It's a year old. It's a Bosch, and it just wouldn't turn on. No electric. And I've done all the usual plug things and that. It'll probably be a fuse. But my new
husband, have you checked the fuse?
No, my new husband's not very practical. He's very clever, but he's an academic. He's DIY. He's like Mr. Bean.
So am I. But I can check the fuse.
I sort of rebooted it and did things like that, but I wouldn't know how to. See, why didn't they teach us this sort of thing at school?
Yeah.
Whereas my dad, Victor, was brilliant. He rewired the whole house just from a book. He was a building society manager, but he rewired the whole house. He was very neat and tidy and shipshape. Everything was shipshape. My new husband, no, let's wouldn't let him.
Let's hope he doesn't find out about this then, because it's not good, is it?
No. I've had the sink aerator broke, didn't it? My hot tap.
Yep.
Had that repaired. The washing machine had to get a new one. That was only 5.5 years old. That was a Siemens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that all of these white goods are failing because we're just hammering them. Because we're at home every day, you must be doing the washing every day.
Well, I always did do the washing every day. You know, just because I went out for work, I just do it at different times. You know, like now I pop it on and I'm sort of around. Right. But, you know, when I went in the days of, you know, when we went out, I still did the bloody washing.
Did you?
Popped it on and went out. And I just think that things are not... And another thing, I just bought myself a bikini top. You'd know about
to do the washing?
No, for a little swim.
I've seen that film. Didn't it have what's his name in it? Robin Asquith.
Yeah, I used to laugh. Wasn't he the window cleaner?
Yeah, Confessions of. Yeah. Confessions of a Dishwasher Repairman.
Well, I bought myself. Oh, well, I actually have a story about that.
Oh, no, you really don't.
I could never tell you on air. No. But it did happen to me where a washing machine engineer made me sit on the top of it while he tested it. Seriously, and I was very young and very naive, and he kept me on that washing machine for about an hour and a half. It was really, when I think back, I was in my 20s in Clapham Junction. But yeah, terrible. I mean, who would even do that? It is very spooky. But I bought myself a bikini top, which, because girls all want these push-up underwire things, and I hate them. Mm-hmm. I don't like the restriction of pads. I don't want a padded bikini top. I don't want my boobs by my ears. I don't particularly want it, and I don't want the restriction of underwire. I think it's very bad for you. So it took me a long time, and I got one from Next, little bikini top. It's very nice, and you just pull it over, and it's comfy. But it's made in China, so I was bristling. I was bristling about this. Why is everything made in China?
Was it static electricity?
I don't know why. My hair was like this.
it made me chest bristle.
But I'm going to tweet them and ask them. But, of course, my new husband says, well, it's economics. You know, why? Yeah. And I said, but they're a communist country. You know, look what they're doing to the Muslim Muslim camps there. Yeah. We shouldn't be. I'm shocked that a company like Next is making underwear that we're all using in China.
Yeah, but until you can stop people buying cheap stuff and make them buy expensive stuff, you haven't got much of a hope, have you? And that's the problem. It's not so much the supplier in terms of Next or whoever it is. It's the customer. If the customer says, oh, I don't want stuff made in China, I'll pay a couple of extra quid for it to be made in Clapham Junction, then that's fine. Then,
what about Romania and Czechoslovakia?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Is Czechoslovakia, it doesn't exist anymore, does it?
Well, it's the Czech Republic. Yeah.
Czech Republic, that's it. Yeah. I'm so
And
so Slovakia, why can't we make things?
Country. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, you Slovenia. Could, you know, I mean, you could. I mean, you know, those countries have to step up. But, of course, then because they're part of the EU, some of them are, then it's no cheaper to make it there as it is to make it here. And the whole point about this is cheapness, isn't it? Even though you're shipping it right away around the world, the Chinese are knocking it out cheaply, and people want to pay as little money as they can to buy stuff. And Gavin's absolutely right. It's the economics of it. The only way that you're going to stop that is if people pay money for properly made stuff locally. It will cost you more, and the reason it will always cost you more is because in the West is we have safety nets for workers, we have minimum wage, you have workers' rights, quite rightly, all those things that keep workers safe all cost money, and that's what happens to the product.
But a lot of these things, like, I mean, I don't know about you, but my knickers from Marks and Spencer's now.
I don't know about your knickers, no.
they fall apart. They used to be made much better, but now they sort of go at the seams. And I remember one of our famous journalists, one of the blokes, said that his Marks and Spencer pants didn't, you know, weren't made like they used to be. Right. You know, in the old days, they'd last for years, wouldn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Now you're sort of buying them every couple of years.
Yeah, so, well, the answer to that is not to keep washing them in every day. Just turn them inside out and wear them again for another week.
And then my washing machine might last more than 5.5 years.
Exactly, yeah.
So if the list, listeners can tweet in and tell us what they would prefer. Would you rather pay £2 extra, perhaps, for something that's made in, I don't know, up north, you know, Scunthorpe, or, you know, we used to have the linen factories, the cotton factories, didn't we?
Yeah.
Didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did. But it's like anything, isn't it? You know, things move, things change, and it's cyclical. You know, we in the 90s and early 2000s, we pushed all of our service industries into Asia and places like that for call centres. Mm. In the last 5 years or so, they've been bringing them all back because the customers didn't like it. And eventually the customers rebelled and said, I'm not doing it. I'm not ringing these call centres.
Call centre, which reminds me, I'm due for an upgrade on my Vodafone. And oh my goodness, I had a talk with Toby. You know, Toby, the Vodafone chat. Yeah. I was half an hour. Yeah. And I just said, I thought I'd do this, you know. And I just said, I need an upgrade. Here's my number. Da, 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 da. Half an hour. And I got absolutely nowhere. I was just repeating the same thing. And in the end, I just marched off and left.
It's mad, isn't it? I'm just about to upgrade my Sky. I did try before. And I ordered it. I ordered a Sky Q box and a mini box. And I'll tell you the conversation I had in a minute. Anyway, when they turned up to do it, the bloke said to me, oh, your aerial's up right up on the chimney. I went, yeah.
And that's where they're supposed to be.
He said, well, I've got to change the aerial. I said, well, nobody mentioned that to me. Nobody asked me about the aerial at all. Oh, they should have done. I mean, well, they didn't. They didn't even mention the aerial. And if they had, I would have pointed out the fact that it's on a three-story house and you can't get up there on a ladder. Anyway, so they had to go away and they've ordered a difficult access crew or something.
Your house isn't that difficult. I could have popped up there for you. Yeah, no problem.
But
after a couple of gins.
The thing that's really annoying me about Sky, is I went through this, I want to upgrade. And they go, right, you can have, they always try and upsell you a dozen things you don't want when you're trying to do something else, So I said, I want a Sky Q box and a mini box. Right, well, would you like it in ultra high HD 4K? No. It's free. Then why are you asking?
Yeah, have it.
Well, hold on. It's free for 6 months. Well, no, I don't want it. but you get it as standard. So why are you asking? Yeah. Anyway, half an hour going round and round in circles about all the things I didn't want. And at the end of it, I said, right, stop there. We've now decided what we've got. I want to keep the package I've got in terms of the programs I look at, and I want the two new boxes. What's the total cost for that a month? £95. Right, okay. So you're guaranteeing everything we've just talked about is £95. Yeah. That was 2 weeks ago. Every day I've had an email from Sky with a different price on it.
No.
Yeah. I got one yesterday. Your sports package will be going up by £2 a month. They never send you a statement of everything. So you can't tell how much it's going to be. Yeah. They go, and then this morning I got an email. Your movie package will be going up by £3 a month from April.
It's all done by stealth, isn't it?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, they took £125 out of my account. When they said it was going to be 95.
95, yeah.
And you're going, well, yeah, we don't know, but the prices have gone up since then.
No, that's awful. I mean, that's crooked.
It is, and it's and nowhere, and I've asked three people now to tell me how much it's going to be, and what I've asked for is a statement. I want a statement that lists all the things I've got and how much they cost.
Mm.
But they will not do that. They will not send it. I don't get an invoice with it on. They just take the money out of a direct debit. Or if I ask, they'll say, you've got the sports package. Yeah, I know that.
And do you watch a lot of sport?
That's the only thing I do watch.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's the only thing I do watch. And again, because of the way they operate, I had to buy some package that included things I didn't want so that I could have the things I did want.
It's so the same with my mum with her Sky. I hate it.
I'm fast getting to the point where, do you know what, I might just abandon the whole thing and just go to Now TV and buy the sport that I want when I want it. But
well, or either that or just get a goalpost and play football in the garden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you're quite good at football. I've seen you.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to drag you out the goal on one occasion just to get you a supper.
I'm a bit past that now.
I think it's the customer, it goes back to the customer experience though, isn't it? When you feel that you're parting with quite a lot of money, but you're not actually getting a straight answer, then it's not a nice feel good thing. And
no, and the problem is they're not answering the question because they're too busy trying to upsell you everything. I don't want to be upsold at this stage. What I want to do is start by finding out what I'm paying for, and then we might look at some added extras in a minute. But every time you ask a question, I go, "Oh, you could have the 3D version of that." And I didn't ask you that. I asked you what I was paying for movies. Oh yeah, well if you have the movie package on a Friday, you can get it at Tuesday's price for the next Wednesday's.
Well, you see, you've already made me uppity because you've called it a movie, and of course it's a film. Because you know I don't like Americanisms all the time. It's a film.
But
it's not a movie.
But it's a movie package.
I know, but it's annoyed me already. we've got...
Well, that's just awesome.
Yeah, that really annoys me. Yeah. And takeout also annoys me.
Anyway, listen, we've been yabbering for half an hour, which is far too long, and you haven't even read an email yet.
I've done no work whatsoever.
An email.
This is really interesting. I love this. It's about Herne Bay, which is quite near me. So a Herne Bay businessman is planning to open a new gym and a barber shop. So he's hedging his bets there, isn't he? He's doing everything. Yeah. It's Leading Results Fitness, and he's launched a bid to convert part of the manufacturer wall. I never know how to say that. Wall, W-A-H-L, former C Street base into a fitness centre. Rob Whitfield says that the 930 square meter facility will create 15 new jobs and be equipped with physiotherapy and massage rooms. Rob believes adding a barber shop to the site will get people signed up. And Mr. Whitfield is hoping to secure the green light from Canterbury City Council to turn the space into a gym ahead of a planned summer opening. Really good. Love that. I don't know what's happened to Wall, though. It'd be interesting to find out if they're leaving.
They just moved to bigger premises.
Oh, okay. Because I've bought a couple of things from them over the years.
Yeah, yeah.
Toasters and things.
Mm.
Canterbury City Centre will look somewhat different in its pre-pandemic state, with 23 businesses closing down since March 2020 and 23 new ones opening. So let's talk about the ones that are closing first of all. So it's Cafe Rouge, which I used to like, actually. I used to have one of their little cards to get a free coffee every now and then. Top Chop, Yo Sushi, Burton's, Keo, Dorothy Perkins, Dotty P's to you, and Debenhams. They've all gone, along with a raft of smaller businesses, much sadly missed. And this month, plans have been submitted for a new fish and chip restaurant in Burgate, which is going to where Warren's Bakery was, which closed last year. And the store near to the cathedral entrance will be turned into a mini restaurant and operate under the name Seafarer. Then Canterbury Business Improvement District Chief Lisa Carson says the continued interest in the city is a very positive sign. She hasn't really said much about the other 23 businesses.
No, they're all just small businesses that people wouldn't have heard of, so which is good. It's good, but they won't replace the big businesses that we've lost.
Yeah, I would like to know more about that. She says it's really bucked the trend, and I think we'll see again that Canterbury is an open-air city. You're never far away from a park or a garden. Mm. I think fish and chips will always, if they're good, will always, a takeaway is good. Two Kent companies have won top national awards in a competition designed to celebrate businesses in rural areas, and the Rural Business Awards highlights entrepreneurial spirit in the countryside, with this year's event being held in partnership with online giant Amazon. The Kent winners were the Oak Barn Frame Barn in Benenden, which was named Best Sustainability and Environmental Impact Business. It provides a setting for weddings. Do you remember them?
Yeah.
Parties. Do you remember them?
Yeah.
And events. Do you remember them? And transformed redundant Grade 2 listed farm buildings into an energy efficient destination. Also emerging triumphant was Romney Marsh Walls, our friends, from Aldington. It was named Best Rural Creative or Artisan Business at the first ever Virtual national final of the year. It uses its flock of sheep to produce wools for throws, cushions, hats, scarves and gifts. Beautiful products, aren't they?
Fantastic.
We used to be near them.
Yeah.
In Romney Marsh.
Yeah, well, they've been on the show as well.
Christina,
who's one of the owners of Romney Marsh, have been on the show.
I've got quite a few of her. Well, I bought my new husband some slippers from there when we were in Romney Marsh, and I've also got some lovely wool socks from her.
Yeah,
they're gorgeous.
Absolutely. Right, that's it. We've run out of time. It's lovely to talk to you.
Okay.
Have a fantastic week, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Lovely. Goodbye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Blimey, she does go on, doesn't she? Anyway, let's catch up with the FSB news.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
There you go.
The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
There's a webinar. There's an invitation from Kent County Council, and it's a webinar, Building Futures in Kent and Medway. It's taking place on Tuesday the 16th of March, 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. There's a few webinars here. At the end of them, I'll give you the booking details. There's a Kent Women in Business brunch on the 9th of March, 11 a.m. It's a virtual event hosted by Sue Hainsby of Carlene Lettings. It's International Women's Day, and there's a celebration on Thursday the 18th of March, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Celebrate International Women's Day with us and keynote speakers as we seek to understand how COVID-19 has impacted specifically on female entrepreneurs. Hear about the steps they've taken to steer their firms through changing business restrictions and unexpected personal challenges. Then on Wednesday the 24th of March, there's Maidstone Virtual Networking, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Peter Searle is hosting this FSB Connect online event in association with Metro Bank. Isla Butler, who is the bid manager for One Maidstone, will be providing an update on the work of the Town Centre's Business Improvement District. These Maidstone events are relaxing networking with like-minded business owners, and everyone is welcome. You can find out more about all of those events, and you can book your place on them by going to www.kentbusinessradio.co.uk and /FSB, or go to bizradio.co.uk and hit the FSB tab at the top of the site, and you will find all of those events listed there under the events page, where you can find out more and you can book your attendance at one or all of those events. There's also a new FSB app, and with the new FSB app, we're by your side wherever you are. You can manage your membership on your mobile, access your benefits, and find out what's happening near you. It's never been easier to make the most of the FSB. Simply click on the. You can download the new app from the Apple App Store if you're an iPhone user, or you can download it from the Google Play Store if you're an Android phone user. Okay, I think, what else have we got? I think that's it from the FSB. Oh no, here you go. You're not alone. Looking after our mental health and well-being is important. Download our free guide and visit the FSB Care Hub. If you go to www.kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB Care, you can find out all about help and support that's available, and download a free guide. So that's the FSB news for this week. Thank you for joining us on the Business Bunker show. We've reached the end of the show. We'll be back next week with another show. Stay safe, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
It's Channel 2.